the Radio Ranch in beautiful Sugar Land, Texas, where life truly is sweeter. It's the Bombastic Blogcast for Monday, December the 18th, 2023. I am the G-Man, Dan Gallo.
Hey, G-Man.
There yourself. Defender of the peace, keeper of the justice, purveyor of truth, and one heck of a nice guy. Since it is Monday, let's do that Monday march back to work. Come on, everybody. Just straighten out your backbone there a little bit, put a smile on your face, and keep a prayer on your lips, and everything will be just fine. Now let's get things officially started with
the Daily Datagram.
You got it. Words of wisdom, words of inspiration, brain droppings, or noggin nuggets. You get to make the call. Good one here. It says, never let a problem become an excuse. True that. Because in time, that excuse will become your problem.
Houston, we have a problem.
Let's move along now with the so-called educational part of the broadcast, shall we?
Twisted History. Gather around, kids, because a lot of things happen on this day throughout history.
Big stuff.
Some cool, some not so cool. Uh-huh. Just the same. You need to know your Twisted History.
All right.
You might be quizzed.
Yeah, you keep saying that. All right, kids, it was on this day in 1917, the 18th Amendment to the U.S. Constitution, authorizing prohibition of alcohol, was approved by the U.S. Congress and sent to the states for ratification. Shortly thereafter, there was an unusual uptick in the sales of bathtubs. And it was on this day in 1957, the world's first full-scale nuclear power plant for peacetime use only began to generate electricity at the Shippingport Atomic Power Station in Pennsylvania. And while the original facility was decommissioned in 1989, a new facility on the same site continues to generate electricity to this day, with no reports of people glowing in the dark.
I feel so funky.
Here we are, roaring into the holidays big time, and in a move that has sent shockwaves through the toy industry, a leading toy maker, Hasbro, has announced the layoff of more than 1,000 employees just as the holiday season approaches. In fact, a lot of people have already finished their Christmas shopping, and this decision has raised eyebrows and questions about the underlying reasons for such a drastic measure during what's traditionally the most lucrative time of year for toy makers. Now, to be sure, the economy hasn't done any American any favors. Well, except for those select few who can actually profit from a bad economy, like George Soros. But the company, renowned for its popular brands like Peppa Pig, Transformers, Monopoly, and Dungeons & Dragons, has been facing a downturn in sales. Their CEO cited the first three quarters as particularly challenging, especially in the toy sector, which is still reeling from the highs of the pandemic era when families turned to board games and action figures to pass the time during the lockdowns. And there's a lot of speculation that the partnership with Disney may have contributed to the company's woes. Sounds plausible. Because, you know, recently we've seen a decline in the popularity of certain Disney franchises, with toys linked to the latest Indiana Jones movie and Marvel offerings failing to meet sales expectations after both films performed poorly at the box office. You know, that Indiana Jones thing, that thing tanked. Certainly didn't do Harrison Ford any favors. And the Marvel stuff is nothing more than just total rehashes of films that came before it. And social media users actually haven't hesitated to draw connections between the layoffs and the toy makers' association with Disney. Hadn't thought about that before, but think about that possibility. That being associated with Disney now, knowing what we know about Disney and their push, their very fervent push to promote transgenderism. And of course, it's their idea. It's Disney's idea of DEI. And it's backfiring. And this guy, Bob Iger, who had retired from Disney and then had to come back to try to save them, you would think he would understand this, but apparently he doesn't. He still persists in this misbegotten path that Disney has taken. So, a lot of people are suggesting that, excuse me, Disney's recent decisions have negatively impacted other companies, including companies like Hasbro who produce merchandise for the Disney franchises. Now, the reported revenue declines of between 10 and 17% year on year have only added fuel to the fire. So you also toss in the equation, too, that American families aren't spending what they used to because of this sucky economy. So critics have pointed to the broader implications of embracing certain policies and cultural stances, implying that the company's current predicament could be a result of prioritizing this DEI initiative over business fundamentals. What's more important, a political or cultural agenda or business? Don't know about you, but to me that's kind of a no-brainer. We go with the business, because what's good for business is good for America. So this DEI perspective suggests that policies like that may have alienated a rather sizable portion of the consumer base. And then, of course, it has financial repercussions. Now, the closure of the Providence, Rhode Island office of Hasbro marks a significant contraction for the toy maker, kind of indicating a shift in the company's operational footprint. And this has left a lot of people wondering about the future of the employees affected by the layoffs and the local economy that benefited from their presence. Now, as the news spreads, there's a growing sense of unease among shareholders and consumers alike, naturally. Questions are being raised about the strategic direction of the company and whether the partnership with Disney is all that good an idea. Is it sustainable in the long term? So the mass layoffs at Hasbro have sparked a debate about the influence of partnerships, brand associations, and corporate policies on business health. I mean, because the company's going to have a rough time. They have to navigate these turbulent times. The industry is going to be watching closely to see how it adapts to changing consumer tastes and market challenges, and there will be many. The coming months are going to be critical in determining whether the toy maker can bounce back or if this is the beginning of a deeper decline. And looking at the economy, the way it has been performing or not performing over the last, certainly 18 months, there are signs once in a while that maybe things are starting to ease up, but that only lasts for about a week or two. And then we have other indicators that show that, wow, we're really in a tailspin economically. And then you look at all the money we're spending on things like Ukraine and subsidizing the manufacture of electric automobiles that nobody wants. You should see the lots, the stockpiles of vehicles nobody wants to buy. I mean, this all has a ripple effect, and we're not rippling too well. In more employment bad news, General Motors is laying off 1,300 workers. Now, you would think that in a company that large, that that's not a significant number, but it is. They just announced they're going to be delaying electric pickup truck production as well, which I would think for the very survival of that company, that's a wise move. Now, CBS reported that General Motors is going to lay off about 1,300 workers from two of its Michigan plants. And this is according to WARN notices the company has filed with state regulators. A WARN notice is basically a notice that is sent to everybody affected. And you got to send a notice to the state government and let them know this is happening. You send it to local governments. You send it to the employees, to the company overall. And the job cuts at GM's Orion Assembly and Lansing Grand River Assembly plants, which will take place in the new year, come after GM said in October that it was going to be delaying electric pickup truck production into 2025. They have to. Nobody's buying them. The press, quite frankly, and I want to emphasize the impartial press, has been very on the level when it comes to electric vehicles. They've been upfront in talking about the downside, and there are many, of electric vehicles in general, but particularly pickup trucks, when you want to use your pickup truck to tow something. And these batteries are not holding up to the strain of these huge loads. I'm not saying that the vehicles don't perform. They do. But where do you go to recharge? And when you're towing something, the battery doesn't hold the charge nearly as long. Now, these layoffs at the Orion plant are going to affect 945 workers, while 369 employees are going to be cut from the Lansing assembly plant. The Orion plant produced the Chevy Bolt EV and Bolt EUV crossover, and GM's planning to produce additional electric vehicles, namely the Chevy Silverado EV and GMC Sierra EV at the plant. But the company announced in October that that was going to be delayed, sealing the fate of workers while the plant remains idled. In 2022, GM got $824 million from taxpayers in Michigan. Wow. GM promised to convert its Orion plant to make electric vehicles and that they'd create 4,000 jobs in Michigan. Hasn't happened, has it? Now, why did they make this decision? Under pressure from the Biden administration. Never mind that we don't have the technology to produce all these vehicles and to service them and to keep them fueled. We do not have the technology to do it. And I'm not just talking about the chargers, the charging stations. I'm talking about the generation of enough electricity to keep these vehicles on the road and keep them running. We do not possess that technology. Do I have to repeat this? It's very serious. And meanwhile, you have this robotic president of ours, Joe Biden, who has no free mind of his own anymore, and he's merely acquiescing to the orders that are handed down to him by Barack Obama. You will produce these vehicles. And we'll even pay you to produce the vehicles, but you will produce the vehicles that nobody wants to buy. Now, according to Breitbart, in January of 22, Governor Whitmer up there in Michigan announced a massive financial agreement with GM, which basically saw Michigan taxpayers footing an $824 million bill to have the automaker promise to invest billions in auto jobs across Michigan. GM's $7 billion investment in Michigan, the largest in their history, they said was going to create and retain 5,000 good-paying jobs and enable them to build on their legacy as the place that put the world on wheels. That's what Whitmer said. That was in her press release. Now, as part of that agreement, GM promised to convert its Orion plant to produce EVs with a $4 billion investment while investing millions in the Lansing plant. Well, the agreement vowed to create 4,000 auto jobs in Michigan. Hasn't happened. They're laying off. And then Mary Barra, who's the GM CEO, said at the time that the investments wouldn't have been possible without Whitmer's helping shore up taxpayer money to give the automakers big tax breaks. I don't know about you, but I'm a little sick and tired of watching companies like GM. As much as I love cars, I do. I'm such a gearhead. Have been ever since I was a little kid. I mean, when I was a little kid, I loved the 49 Cadillac. Wow, that was such a neat looking car. But I'm really sick and tired of watching taxpayers prop up, not just GM. We've propped up all of them. We've propped up all of the big three. I think the only positive scenario I've seen was the one that Lee Iacocca pulled off with Chrysler back in the late 70s. He went to the government, got a loan, turned around, he invented the minivan, came out with that series of K cars that, you know, frankly, weren't the most beautiful cars on the road. But boy, oh boy, oh boy, they were doing the right things at the right time. They were getting great fuel mileage. They were pretty darn good vehicles. You still see some of them on the road every so often. And he was so successful in this program, and he did these TV commercials himself instead of paying high-priced talent. And he did a pretty good job of it, too. And I don't know, Iacocca coming into your living room, convincing you to buy the K car. A lot of people did. And he did so well with that. He paid the government back 7 years early with interest. That's the only time I've seen a really good scenario. But congratulations, you go out and you pay premium prices for your new car, the car that you must have for your family. And granted, cars cost far more than they should. I mean, I could make the case that we don't need power windows, especially when your car's air conditioned. Good grief, I remember my dad paying $1,400 for a brand new 53 Pontiac four-door sedan. And he bought it during the year-end clearance of 1953's model year. And it had a standard transmission, no power steering, no power brakes, roll-up windows. The only options he had on the car was a clock and a heater. He didn't get a radio for that car until about 5 years later. Finally broke down, and he went to a junkyard and got a radio for it for $15, and he was screaming about $15 for a radio from a junkyard. And you look at all the stuff we've got on cars today. Is it all really necessary? What's the cheapest car you can buy these days? $25,000? It's nuts. And then your tax money has to prop up the company that built that car. We've lost our brains. We really have. Good old CNN, always willing to put lipstick on that pig called the Biden economy, Bidenomics. But there was a very rare moment of sheer honesty on the part of CNN. Data reporter Harry Anton surprised host Erica Hill when he looked into the camera, pointed at his chart, and pointed out that the economic numbers currently spelling a nightmarish scenario for Joe Biden are depressing.
U.S. markets soaring higher again yesterday. This is on the heels of pretty strong economic data. The Fed signaling three possible interest rate cuts next year. The latest data actually shows the U.S. added nearly 200,000 jobs last month. Unemployment dropped to 3.7%. And while inflation has cooled to 3.1%, that's down from 9.1% last summer. Still, though, the vast majority of Americans say the economic conditions right now are poor. So the big question there is why? CNN senior data reporter Harry Anton joining us now to dig into this. Why, Harry?
Why? You know, you mentioned the stock market. Okay, when judging the U.S. economy, you look at what? Stock market indexes, only 42% of Americans look at that when they're judging the economy. The national data that you mentioned, only 66% of Americans look at that. Your own experiences, 85% of Americans look at that when judging the economy. And take a look here. Think your income is keeping up with inflation? Just 24% of Americans say yes. The vast majority, 76%, say no.
So this is your feeling, right? This is your gut on this. As an American answering the survey, how does that figure into the reality and what the numbers show us?
Yeah, I mean, if you were to look basically at disposable income, the change in disposable income, that is probably the weakest economic measure there is out there. From the first year of a president's term to now in a term, look at this. We've actually had negative growth. We've actually decreased the amount of disposable income we've had, 2.7% for the Biden administration. Look at that. The average for the president since JFK is plus 4.5%. And even in the last few months, the last 6 months, the growth that we've had, just 0.2%. The average 6 months since 1960, 1.1%. So we're even behind on that metric.
It's kind of depressing.
It is kind of depressing. And the one last thing I'll note, even wages here, not going up. Medium wage, minus one since pre-pandemic, minus one since Biden's first year. Since last quarter, 0%. Wages have been stagnant for a long time, and it's continuing to be so.
According to a story that was published by the Daily Caller, Hill noted during this segment that there have been gains in the U.S. stock market and echoed the claim from the Biden administration that the U.S. added 200,000 jobs last month and dropped unemployment to 3.7%. You may have caught that. But this fails to acknowledge that according to the Federal Reserve Bank of San Francisco, the labor participation rate continues to languish. And it continues to languish at historic lows, the lowest point since the 1980s. So the FRBSF, Federal Reserve Bank of San Francisco, okay, they wrote, quote, people in their prime working years, ages 25 to 54, make up the bulk of the U.S. labor force. However, the fraction of prime age men not participating in the labor force has risen for decades from 5.8% in 1976 to 11.4% in 2022. this trend has contributed to slower growth of the U.S. labor force. So, this bullcorn about Bidenomics creating 200,000 new jobs, that's exactly what it is, bullcorn. And as noted by the Daily Caller, additional economic indicators demonstrate the bleak outlook the American people are seeing. You don't need an economics expert to point this stuff out to you. We're feeling it. Street level, my friend. Prices for food, rent, transportation, all remain very high. Still up 17.2% since Biden took office in 21. Because that was January 21 when he took over the White House. And things started to go to hell in a handbasket. No, they started to go to hell in a Barack Obama basket. And, you know, this figure here, the 17.2% since Biden took office, that's according to the Federal Reserve Bank of St. Louis. And over that same period, wages have dropped 2.1%. I'd like to see a show of hands of anybody who would like to see that continue. If anything amazes me these days, it's the honesty that Hunter Biden does express in certain settings. Now, he was supposed to appear before a congressional committee. He didn't. He scoffed at it. Instead, outside the Capitol building, he set up a podium and talked to the press. And he reportedly expressed fears that he may need to seek refuge outside the country should Donald Trump reclaim the White House. Now, this development comes as Hunter faces a barrage of personal political attacks and an accumulation of legal problems that have cast a long shadow over the Biden family. Hunter has not done that family a whole lot of favors, but then Joe Biden didn't seem to do anything to stop it. And his concerns, Hunter's concerns, aren't unfounded, given the scrutiny he's been under since the big guy's vice presidential tenure. Now, Hunter's business dealings, particularly those in Ukraine, have been a focal point for Republican criticism, but that's all it's been is criticism. I mean, why has the Republican Party not, with all its energy, gone after Hunter? Because if they did, it would instantly and by default lead to impeachment of Joe Biden. But what do I know? I don't have the political science degree. But, I mean, it's all there. Allegations of corruption. And the specter of these controversies that hang over both Bidens, really, like a dark cloud, is, of course, by default, looming over the Biden administration. And maybe that's a good thing, because it's going to derail the political agenda of the Biden administration, which would be a good thing for us all. Case in point, Bidenomics. Anyhow, the situation has escalated to the point where Hunter could face a pretty goodly amount of prison time if convicted on recent charges. And recent charges, what do they include? Three felony counts and six misdemeanors. And the potential for a nearly two-decade sentence underscores the seriousness of his legal predicaments. Now, during all this turmoil, the prez is said to be deeply concerned about his son's well-being. So you just know that somewhere in there, daddy and son have had a discussion about, well, where could the son go? Where could Hunter go for safety? You know, because Joe Biden's apprehension is not just political, it's also personal. Because he's afraid of the possibility of Hunter relapsing into addiction. And if he's not concerned about Hunter's problems becoming a real problem for himself, you know, Joe Biden, the president, then, well, I was going to say the man's not fully together, and he's not. We all know that. Anyhow, Hunter's own words reflect a sense of being besieged by relentless problems that seek to tarnish the bond between him and his father. That's got to be a very uneasy thing. That's something we're not privy to. He's accused his detractors of having no shame in their efforts to cast a pall over the family and the family's love that's been his source of strength during trying times. His words. You know, my God. How does that guy look at himself in the mirror? Now, the White House has largely refrained from engaging in the crux of the fray, instead just emphasizing the president's unwavering support for his son. And all the while, even though we know better, the president is still claiming, I don't know what my son's business was up to. I have no idea about that. And presidential aides have seemingly resigned themselves to the president's approach, because they know that any suggestion of Hunter being a liability is met with disapproval from Joe. So this was all evident when Hunter attended a state dinner without any apparent concern for the optics or potential fallout. Decisions like that underscore the Biden family's commitment to unity in the face of all these problems. Okay, I'll grant them that. I admire that part. But they always say, blood is thicker than water. But this blood in the Biden family is bad blood. We have a newbie in the comedy corner. He's from Wisconsin. His name is Tim Harmston.
All right. Yeah. Hey, I'm from Wisconsin. So, I'm used to being number one in a lot of stuff. None of it's that good. It's always like high cholesterol, heart attacks, cheese-related rodeo injuries. But maybe we're not that bad. I just found out that we're the only state that reimburses hunters if their dog gets eaten by a bear. up to $2,500. Now, look, I love my dog. But when he gets old, we are going hunting. And Chihuahua don't normally hunt bear. We're only going once. No, I don't hunt. I don't hunt because, you know, if you hunt, I support you. I just don't, because you can't show up in the woods in a Prius. You can't shoot a deer and put it on the front of a Prius and drive it home. It's embarrassing for the deer. The deer's like, just shoot me again. This is embarrassing. You gotta put the deer in a truck, you know? I've always wanted a truck. My wife encouraged me to go to the dealership, just ask a few questions, you know? So I went in, and this big, burly truck salesman was like, well, what kind of tow ratio are you looking for? I didn't know what that meant, so I was like, five on each foot, I think. Five on the brake, five on the gas, yeah. I wanted a pickup truck and a chainsaw. That's all I've ever wanted. My wife just got me a chainsaw for our anniversary. Yeah, it was an electric one from Aldi. Yeah, there's no outlets in the woods. I gotta run a lot of cable just to cut down a shrub. I just want to be tougher, you know? I think that's why I like football players, you know? Like, I'm a huge football fan, and, like, just, they're so tough. Like my favorite running back of all time was Adrian Peterson. He was so tough. He tore all the ligaments in his knee, and then less than a year later, he rushed for over 2,000 yards to become the NFL MVP. And just to put that in perspective, when I was a freshman in high school, I played running back, and the coach was like, take a knee. I went down on my knee, and there was a sand wasp in the dirt. I missed 4 years.
Make it a marvelous Monday. Thank you for listening. We'll catch you on tomorrow's Bombastic Blogcast. Remember, no such thing as spare change, free lunch, or too much horsepower. And you be sure to take some time today just to thank the good Lord that you're an American.
You mean that's it? That's it?
See you tomorrow, G-Man.